Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you know her from her best-selling novels Big Little Lies, Nine Perfect Strangers, Apples Never Fall, The Last Anniversary. She has sold 20 million books. Three stories have been adapted for television with Nicole Kidman in tow. Now Australian superstar author Leanne Moriarty is back with her latest novel, Here One Moment, and she's on the line from the BBC. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning, Oliver.
Do I find you in good form and well?
You do. You really do.
Oh, excellent. OK, that's good to hear. Now, this novel, Here One Moment, it is a very strong opening, doesn't it? And you give readers a very powerful thing to imagine from the start.
Yes. So it's about a woman who stands up on an ordinary domestic flight in Australia.
Yes.
And she counts herself in. She says 3, 2, 1. And she starts pointing at every passenger on the plane as she walks down the aisle as if she's handing out snacks, but what she's handing out is predictions of the age and cause of death for every passenger. And every passenger gets off the flight, and some of them still think about the prediction she gave them, and others put it out of their mind, but then a few months later, the first prediction comes true.
And on we go into wondering, who is this woman? And is what she's saying possibly true? That's the dilemma.
Exactly.
As if flight delays weren't traumatic enough for the people involved in this. This came to you while actually waiting on a flight yourself.
Yes, that's exactly right. I was on exactly the same flight where I put all my fictional characters, and it was a long delay on the tarmac. And that's when the cheerful thought came into my head that every single passenger on this plane was going to one day die. And I was looking around at my fellow passengers, and so I was thinking, will you be the one who makes it to 100, or will you be the one whose life is unexpectedly cut short?
Yeah.
And that's when I thought, imagine if that information was available right now.
I mean, it's hard for us readers to get away from that question. Would we like to know when we're going to go, how we're going to go, and how it would change our lives if we did know, or at least believe that we knew?
Yes, that's the thing, yes.
The joy of setting in a plane is that you have a huge cast of different characters. Tell us who the woman is, first of all.
So her name is Cherry. I won't say too much about her because the reader gets to know her very slowly.
That's right.
Yes. And I sort of describe her whole life.
Yes.
And you don't know, does she have psychic powers or not, but I can tell you that she is the daughter of a very successful fortune teller.
Yes.
But that's all I think I should say.
Yeah, that's a fair way of putting it. She is known as the Death Lady, which she tells us. She's the narrator throughout this. And but the other characters, I mean, Leo is a great character, a kind of a harried middle-aged dad with bad time management skills. And
yes.
Will you tell us who the characters are?
Yes, so Leo is a civil engineer and struggling with managing his time and I guess a workaholic. And he's told that he's going to die in a workplace accident. So that's then the question that he faces, because once the predictions start coming true, his wife doesn't want him to go to work anymore.
Yeah.
And then there is a harried young mother who was given a terrible prediction about her child, which I feel terrible about.
Oh, yes, you should.
I do.
Because the child's a baby at the start.
Yes, I know. I know. And some people are really cross with me about that. But I should say that It sounds like a really morbid novel, but it's. I think it's also a hopeful and sometimes funny novel.
Oh, you are correct to say. I mean, I wish we could discuss the ending, but we absolutely can't. But
I know, wow. That's a tricky part.
And I'm quite a cynical person, but you really got me with the ending in particular, which unfolds very quickly when it does come down to it. And as you're pointing out, it's a lady holding her baby, and this death lady points and says the child's going to drown at the age of 7.
Yes.
And obviously this has a great impact on the mom. And the joy of the novel is just the impact it has on their lives, because it is a huge conundrum. It's existential. And especially there's great drama when it comes to the characters either believing or not, or whether to tell their close family, friends and colleagues about it.
Yes, that's right. I think when I first set out with the premise, I thought every character would have these amazing revelations about the way they'd live their life. But then I realised that even if a doctor tells you something terrible about your health, the first thing you think is, I don't believe it. And then you think, I want a second opinion. And then you say, I want every form of treatment available. So that's why I think the novel ended up becoming more about how do you fight your fate and how much control do you have over your life.
That's the whole theme, isn't it? Fate versus free will. What role do you think fate or luck has played in your career to date?
Mm-hmm. I think luck has definitely played a role. Mm-hmm. And I always say that fate is a lovely concept when it comes to the good things in your life. So I think it's nice to think I had to go through all those bad boyfriends. It was fate that I then I finally meet my nice, lovely husband. Yeah. And it was fate that I would become a novelist. But then I don't like the idea of fate when it comes to negative things. If I see terrible things on the news, I cannot think, well, that was that child's fate to suffer that terrible whatever injustice. So that's when I don't like fate, and I don't think I believe in it, actually.
Really?
No, I don't think so. I think it's all random, and you've got to roll with the punches and take control when you can.
That can be a horrifying thought, because that means, well, we don't have control, first of all. And everything, if it's random, it has no meaning.
But you can find meaning in other ways. You can find your own meaning with the things that you can control.
Mm. It's no surprise we're going this deep, because it's just one of those novels. I've been thinking about death all the time since.
Have you? I feel like saying sorry again. But that is
that's a good way.
Yes, in a good way, because then it makes you. I just feel that when I lost my dad, it just made me every now and then stop and just think, oh, aren't I lucky to be here still? So I think that's what, if life wasn't finite, then maybe we wouldn't stop to appreciate the beauty of it.
And that's quite recent. He died at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic.
That's right. Yes.
Are you thankful for the years you have with him? What happens when a moment of grief occurs for you?
Yes, I'm thankful for the years I had, and also. But yes, I'd sure like to have a chat with him again, because he's done this amazing thing, and I do often think, because he would share so many stories about his life, and he can't share this particular story. So I'm often thinking, what was that like, Dad? I can't believe he can't tell me.
But you have the chat nonetheless, and tell them what's going on in your life. Would you believe to do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Definitely. Yeah.
Your sister also diagnosed with cancer around the same time, wasn't it? And you yourself diagnosed with breast cancer. You've really been through the mill.
Both of us. Yes. So sort of a few consecutive years. So first she had her diagnosis, then our dad, then the pandemic, and then I myself. But I guess that was also influenced the book, because I was picked up very early. So that just made me think about what if I hadn't, gone for that mammogram. And that sort of showed that was about, destiny and what how you can take control of your own life. So I felt very lucky because of my sister. I was right on time. And in fact, the day that I was due to have the mammogram was the day that I'd lost my dad, because I had it on that day. So it was sort of really? Thanks to the two of them.
That's a lot to be dealing with.
But we're both fine now. So we're good.
I'm glad to hear. Very glad to hear.
Thank you.
You've been writing novels for quite a long time. But this is a really modern one, isn't it? Because there's lots of internet stuff weaved through the story. There's the TikTok video that exposes that some of the predictions are coming true, which goes viral. The online communities around that. And it almost feels like this is how it would go down in real life. And
Yes, I think so. I think it would. I think that's the thing these days, that it's a global village, and that story would go, I think it would go viral.
And there'd be a podcast and a Netflix series.
You're right, there would be.
Do you think this helped you, reading about all of this or focusing so much on other people's fate, I suppose, and how they were going to deal with grief? That must be going through your mind at the time you're writing this novel, because that's your own story as well.
Yes, that's right. And it was, I think, quite therapeutic writing this novel and thinking about grief, and also thinking about destiny. And I can clearly remember being in my car one day and suddenly thinking, no, I really don't believe anything's set in stone. Even if there is something that I've got, some terrible disease that I don't know about right now, maybe there is some young person right now who's thinking, will I study this or will I study that? And they're about to choose to study something, study some science degree, which means they'll be the person who discovers the cure for whatever I've got. So anything could happen. So I could start running marathons, but I won't. But I could. Anything could happen.
And you're slightly touching on that whole butterfly effect, which is so important to the story, that some random decision or some small thing happens in one place and the ramifications spread out and end up with a huge event at the other.
Exactly. And I think there are just billions of butterfly effects happening all the time.
Yeah. You're going to put the fear of God into people, thinking it's all random. Nothing matters.
No, I don't. I've spoken to some people who so strongly believe that everything happens for a reason. And you can't argue with them, because anything that happens, they say that was just meant to happen. And if that's the way you want it, that if that's what gives you peace, then of course I think that's a good way to live your life.
A lovely, comfortable thing there, maybe not fearing anything. Now, in an essay, you wrote that some people see cancer as a gift. You didn't like that.
Well, some people see it, I think, that they think it gives them a new way of looking at their life, a new appreciation of their they have a new gratitude. And I guess I didn't, I didn't feel grateful for it. I just felt wildly aggravated by the by the whole process.
Very honest appraisal. Wisdom? Do you get wisdom from it?
No, I don't think I did. I'm trying to think. Maybe looking, because you're going through the process and you've got your locker and you're seeing all these other women going through the same thing, and some of them much worse than me, because mine was caught so early. So maybe it's not quite true that I didn't gain a little bit of gratitude and maybe more inspiration from just seeing all those women going through the same thing and still smiling and being lovely while I was being grumpy.
If there's any right in life to be grumpy, it is during that period, isn't
Thank you.
Particularly because your dad, would he have been the type of person who would have been very, helpful and good by your side through that sort of ordeal?
Yes, okay. You're right. I missed him. So it would have been nice to for him to have seen me ringing the bell and going out. He would have taken us out to lunch afterwards. So that would have been lovely.
Oh dear, you were very close, obviously.
Yes. Well, he inspired us all to write. So he used to commission. So we've got six children and 50% of us are novelists. And he used to say it was all due to him because when we were little, he gave us our first publishing deal. He paid us $1 for an exercise book filled with words.
Wow. So there's no fate there. He made it all happen.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what he said. He went to an event once, a speaking event I did with my mother, and the two of them ended up signing books there, and they just loved it so much. They couldn't stop laughing.
How quickly did you spend the dollar?
Well, the thing is that he had a plastic roulette wheel and he'd play roulette against us and then win back all the money he paid us before we had a chance to spend it.
Okay. There's a lot of rivalry then when you've got half of the siblings as writers, and there was success elsewhere, wasn't there, before you?
Yes, so my sister, who is the author, Jacqueline Moriarty, she was published first. So that was definitely sibling rivalry that inspired me to finally write my novel, because I was happy for her, but I was also filled with a kind of rage that she'd achieved that our childhood dream and I hadn't even given it a shot.
Wow. How does the parent navigate this among the kids?
Our parents, I think they just watched on with bemusement. that it finally pushed me to write mine. And then our youngest sister also wrote a novel. So I think part of it is also it's just a ripple effect. When one person writes a novel, then other people who are close to them see that it's possible. So Jackie made it seem possible for us.
And once you start selling books in the tens of millions, it puts the competition to bed, really, doesn't it?
Well.
How mean of you.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that too.
And to make matters worse, Nicole Kidman adapting a lot of them. Everyone's going to be wondering about this one. Has Nicole Kidman already been on and looking to sign here one moment?
There's no news as yet. At the moment, I'm hoping everybody who reads the book can just see their own version of Cherry as they read it before we start casting any possible adaptations.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's always nice to have the characters you've built in our minds
before an
actor is attached to it. But it does have miniseries written all over it.
Possibly.
Yes, but
I do seem to have become the TV lady.
Yeah, you have. That's no harm, though, is it, obviously?
No. I'm very, very happy because I love watching all those series myself.
Well, they've been brilliant adaptations. They really have. Now, you can't talk to an Irish audience without us all sitting up and hearing, oh, Moriarty, yes, she's one of ours.
Yes, I am one of yours. When I visited Ireland, it was the Dingle Peninsula, which is where my grandfather's family came from, and we were so, all the Moriartys around, we were so delighted to keep hearing that name.
Yeah, it's a big name down in Kerry, for sure. Very solid Irish connections. And a lot of characters in the books have Irish surnames. Ellen O'Farrell in The Hypnotist's Love Story, Cecilia Fitzpatrick in The Husband's Secret, and, of course, the Delaney family in Apples Never Fall. Thank you for that. Thank you for the notice.
I don't do it. You know what? I don't do it deliberately. I think I just take names from having sort of a Catholic childhood. I think I just automatically took names from my local community, probably.
They're now Australian names.
Yes, basically. That's right. They are.
Apart from the Irish, I love there are such pithy lines, particularly in this novel, from women and about the world for women. And it's no spoiler to say, because Cherry's chatting away to a friend. It's in the 70s, and one of the friends says, well, women in the 80s won't be enduring that kind of sexist behaviour. And I love the fact you say, if you worked in an office, or Cherry's saying it, if you worked in an office in the 80s, please take this moment for a hollow laugh. And then there's a conversation between Cherry's mum, who is, as you said, the entertaining fortune teller, and her sister, when they're talking about why her customers... why women basically go to see people with tarot cards and psychic readings and so on. And Cherry's mum says, because women are more in touch with their intuition. But Auntie Pat grimly says, it's because women have less control over their lives. You have lessons for us.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't deliberately say now I shall give a lesson. but yes, they, I guess, yeah, little things like that find their way in. And this is the first time I've written a novel right from, so she's an elderly woman and I've sort of described her whole life. So she had, yeah, lots of experiences and seen a lot of changes along the way.
Does that have you thinking about your own legacy?
Yeah, I know. I don't really think about legacy. I only want what's right now. Yeah, some people talk to you, would you want to be known for your books after you're gone?
Yeah.
No, I don't care. I only want to be known for them right now.
Okay, that's a good answer. Mm. Would you like to know how you're going to go, exactly how you're going to go, when? I presume you've thought about that.
Well, I've been thinking about that. Obviously, I was thinking about that the whole time I was writing the book. And I came to realise that some people, that's actually their reality if there is a genetic disorder in their family. You know, when sometimes mm-hmm. they're given, a family of siblings are given the choice to know whether they've got a particular gene. And some people say, I'm not going to have the testing, and others do. And I think if that was the case for me, I would want the testing. I couldn't bear to know there was information available. I would want that information.
Yeah.
But I think with the premise that I set up in the book, I'd be like the characters saying, I don't believe you.
I would not believe.
Yeah. Yes.
You're living today.
Yes. I was going to say, I also would... I'd be worried about it. A woman at an event told me that she was, a family member of hers was told that she would, by a psychic of some type, was told that she would die in her 40s, and she worried about it all the time until she reached her 40s.
Oh, wow.
And then she finally died in her 80s.
Wow.
So it's actually a very cruel thing that it I had is. My character do to these poor people on the plane.
And she acknowledges it in ways, but we have
she
to...
She does. She feels very badly about it.
She's a very likeable character, and so much good. Happens to her as well. It's like a whole separate novel, on top of a novel, really. You live very much for the moment. So what do you do on your day-to-day basis? You write every day?
I don't. I'm not one of those writers who has a really strict regime. But I guess when I'm on deadline, I write every day because I'm scared of the looming deadline. Apart from that, yeah, I've got two teenage children, so they control a lot of my destiny.
And that is fate, for sure.
Yes, that's right. It's fate that they'll be quite cruel to me at times.
Yeah,
so they're providing a lot of material.
Loads of material. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and your soothing Australian tones. I hope wherever you are in Australia, the Irish are, because we hear all the time in Ireland that that particularly the Irish who've gone there in the last 15 years or so are maybe not all behaving terribly well. And we've a bad reputation among the Aussies at the moment, don't we?
Oh, no, we love the Irish. I don't know. There might be the occasional misbehaviour, but no, we love the Irish.
I knew you wouldn't lie. Give us the unvarnished truth. Here One Moment is out now. Liam Moriarty, thank you so much for giving us your time.
And, thank you, Oliver.
Have fun on all your adventures.
Thank you so much.
And whatever the butterflies create for you.
Yes.
Good day to you. Bye-bye.
Email oliver@rte.ie.